Greetings from BBS Radio, where truth and news still exist in the original form. You're tuned in to The Spiritual Politician, the show that shows you where politics, government, and selfishness went wrong, and how you can take action to make it right. I'm Melinda Pillsbury Foster, your host for this hour of insights aimed at making each of us more responsible, more cooperative, and more aware of the spiritual bonds that connect us to each other, no matter what we find to bicker about. Now, you can call us toll-free here at the station from the U.S. to 877-876-5227. You can call from Canada to 888-810-8322. Or you can call direct to 530-876-3222. This show is carried online, and you may also be able to get it on the air in your local area. To find out if one of those old-fashioned on-the-air stations in your area carries this show, just contact us at bbsradio.com. The website for this show can be found on the BBS Radio site and at spiritualpolitician.blogspot.com. All past shows become available as soon as is humanly or even extra-humanly possible on the station archives. And my own blog is titled How the Neocons Stole Freedom and is conveniently located at howtheneoconsstolefreedom.blogspot.com. Now, my blog this week got three new entries, but the one on the top now is titled Getting Reality in Pundits and Presidential Candidates. It is most appropriate because our subject today will be presidential candidates, why we support them, the whole configuration of the presidential horse race, and why that needs to change, and what individuals like you and me can do to enact those changes. And now, from the week just passed, this last week, our correspondent in Baghdad, Jane Stillwater, arrived home, and last week I said that she would be on the show, and she will next week. This week, she's using her tickets to go to the meeting with the Dalai Lama in Berkeley, something she has been eagerly awaiting for a long time now. As they say, enlightenment is in the eye of the beholder who looks inward. Jane is bursting with opinions and insights gained from her stay in the Green Zone that included an attack on the Parliament and her observations in the hospital immediately afterwards. As soon as she arrived home, Jane was astonished to be asked to appear on Faux News. You may remember that Faux is the only news available over there. Jane felt pampered to be fetched for her appearance via limousine. However, her appearance was abruptly interrupted by her comments on George Bush. She had her very short say, and they abruptly sent her away. They evidently had hoped her comments would be silly. Unfortunately for them, they were very much on point. We looked in vain for the tape online. It's curiously absent. Why would something as large as Faux News be afraid to air the tape from an interview from a grandmother? Inquiring minds want to know. And events continued to develop here at home. This last week, the action took a turn towards home and the institutions Americans think of as most their own. At the U.S. Air Force Academy on Tuesday, a debate took place between Academy graduate Mikey Weinstein and theocon hitman J. Allen Shekelow. Shekelow was the founder of the ACLJ, which was intentionally named to sound like the ACLU, but which has a very different agenda. While on some issues their work is similar, ensuring the rights of individuals to act as they wish, the overall charge for the ACLJ is very different. That underlying agenda is all about installing a theocratic state to displace the rule of law with the rule of the Bible in America. That was the issue the two men met to take up last Tuesday, the separation of church and state, something Shekelow maintains is wrong and which he and his associates have been covertly chipping away at for years now. Shekelow lost, but the war is not over. We will be interviewing many involved in that ongoing battle here at The Spiritual Politician, so stay tuned. And now our thought for the week ahead. Americans are now becoming enmeshed in the horse race we call the presidential campaigns. We need to take pause and ask ourselves why no one has yet issued job applications for those who want so desperately to be hired on for the onerous and yet so attractive job of occupying the White House. A job application of a very special kind is exactly what's needed. As the ones doing the hiring, we need to know who we're choosing for the job before our options are limited through the manipulations those in power have learned so well to use. We need to get some reality before the primaries. The Iconoclast, Reality Headquarters, is sponsoring a reality caucus. Monday, candidates will receive job applications and forms to fill out, just like they were actually applying for a responsible job. Read about the Reality Caucus at therealitycaucus.blogspot.com. Candidates will then be investigated. Opposition research will pale in comparison. The caucus is asserting real objective standards using innovation and volunteerism, and thus providing the more appropriate formulation so that Americans can do a better job of hiring a management team for our country. Standards, high standards, that are reinforced by the Trust the Check protocol will now be followed. That's a change that America needs most desperately. So check out the Reality Caucus. Now, who to support is a question each of us is asking ourselves today as we survey the field of contenders. Our guest tonight has looked the field over and as an independent, came to a conclusion that shocks many of his friends and family. Stephen Webster is a reporter, a writer, a blogger, and an activist from Lewisville, Texas. He is an investigative reporter with the Lone Star Iconoclast in Crawford, Texas, a staff writer for the News Connection in Southern Denton County, an organizer with DallasRally.com and the Dallas Peace Center, and blogs regularly at gonzomuckraker.blogspot.com. His work has appeared in publications such as the Dallas Morning News and Peace Journalism Magazine, among others. His investigative reporting has been publicized by venues such as The Jones Report, 9/11 Blogger, What Really Happened, The Raw Story, 911truth.org, The Memory Hole, D Magazine and its blog, Front Burner, and The American Chronicle. Please welcome Stephen Webster. Stephen, are you there?
I'm here. How's it going, Melinda?
I'm just beautifully. I'm so glad you could be with us this afternoon, evening, since we're right at sort of that transition point. Now, we always start by asking our guests to tell us something about themselves that we wouldn't otherwise know. So we know a little bit about you professionally. Tell us a little bit about you otherwise.
Well, I'm a younger guy, and I'm in my early 20s. I actually turned 24 this week.
Congratulations.
Thank you. I'm pulled to surprises. Some people who I've worked with or who I've dealt with in my work dealing, I don't know. I don't understand why more young people aren't active and engaged, but I think if current trends hold steady, we're going to be seeing a lot more youth activism very soon.
Mm-hmm. Well, you tend to get active when it starts to impact you, which is, of course, why the 60s were so very, very active, shall we say. Mm-hmm. People didn't want to go away to war.
Yeah, and I've lost a couple friends to Iraq, and I got a family member, my cousin Michael, he's a Navy corpsman, he might be going soon, and I'm keeping my fingers crossed that they'll keep him in Kuwait.
Mm-hmm. And so you decided to go into journalism.
Yeah.
And why did you do that?
It was something that I knew best. I was a journalist, a high school journalist, until I graduated. I was a journalist in college, and I worked on the school's newspapers, and I just learned the trade. I learned it pretty pretty well. I'm not just a journalist, I'm journalist plus, I'm a photographer and I do web work, electronic literature. I can do artwork, layout and design. I've even done some advertising sales. I mean, I'm all over the board when it comes to journalism, so it makes me valuable to a community papers like the one I'm on staff with, or like the Lone Star Iconoclast, which is just an honor, an absolute honor to work for.
Mm-hmm. And, well, the Iconoclast is amazing.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely. It's a real voice for truth out here in Texas and across the whole nation.
Mm-hmm. And in Europe.
And in Europe, too.
Yes.
That's in Europe.
Oh, yes. I mean, actually, it's one in Europe. They think it's a huge publication.
Oh, gosh. No. No, we try. We do our best.
Yes, I know. And it's a good thing. Well, you know, we've got a lot to talk about tonight. And, of course, one of the things that we're going to be talking about is the, you know, how we choose a candidate, the standards by which we, you know, are running our presidential campaigns. And you actually made a decision about who you were going to support as a candidate because you had read his work. So why don't you tell us about that?
Well, for a while now, I've been quite a big fan of Barack Obama. You know, I'm not a party person. I'm not registered Democrat, Republican. I've been an independent ever since I came of voting age. I realize this two-party system is simply not workable, not workable at all. When there's really only one party, it's like Kurt Vonnegut said, the only party that is the winners. And that party gets divided up into two sub-parties, and those are the Democrats and Republicans. And everybody else can just, you know, be poor and die. So I broke out of that. And I don't believe that we should select our candidates based upon their ideology, for one. You know, just because somebody's a Republican or a Democrat or whatever doesn't mean that they should be immediately disqualified because, oh, well, they're just a bunch of slime balls. Well, I mean, come on, take the person at who they are and what they say.
Mm-hmm. And what they do.
Yeah, and what they do. And so, like I said, I was a big fan of Barack Obama, and I still am. But then I started reading columns by Ron Paul on lewrockwell.com. It's lewrockwell.com.
Mm-hmm.
And they've have his entire archive of speeches and articles that Ron Paul has written, going all the way back to 1994, starting with one called Waco Prophet. Ron Paul had it right from the beginning, and he talks about why the Branch Davidian massacre did not have to happen. And mm-hmm. it was the result of a so-called system of justice gone insane. And it turns out that, you know, the Branch Davidians actually only had four guns, and they were locked in a safe. It turns out that they didn't have any poison. It turns out that they didn't have any hostages. They were just a bunch of people whose religious beliefs were a little funny, and they wanted to be left alone. And it's a shame that happened, because it was real. It's a real clear sign that our liberties are being destroyed. They're perishing.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
So I kept reading and kept reading. I've been reading this for days now. A couple weeks, actually. And just absorbing any piece of media about Ron Paul, anytime he's been interviewed on our news channels recently, I've been there to see it or download it. And I'm truly impressed with this guy. I'm more impressed with him than I am with Barack Obama. Of course, mm-hmm. I somehow have a tendency to pick the least popular candidate, and it seems like outside of one or two other guys in the GOP, Ron Paul is kind of the odd man out, so to speak. They don't really want to set him up next to Rudy Giuliani or John McCain.
Well, he's very much not. He's not an establishment candidate, and they know who he is, and they know what he stands for, and they're nervous about him.
Yeah, so he's not an establishment candidate. And I'm not sure if someone like Barack Obama could be considered an establishment candidate, but I suppose it's entirely, it's possible. But if any candidate in the field, both Republican and Democrat and Independent, Libertarian and Green, were an anti-establishment candidate, it's Ron Paul.
That's very true. He's always been a very anti-establishment kind of guy.
Well, and perhaps it's unfair to label him anti-establishment because what's been established is our Constitution, and perhaps we could label the current administration and even some of the current Congress anti-establishment.
Mm-hmm.
They are truly weakening and trying to destroy the tenets of our Constitution. And Ron Paul, as a strict constitutionalist and a true conservative, as a Goldwater conservative, really wants to go back to that. I got to appreciate that.
Mm-hmm.
I don't see.
Well, he's also a very honest guy.
Yeah, and I can really tell that. I was impressed by the fact that he hasn't ever missed a vote in Congress. That's phenomenal.
Mm-hmm.
I was even more impressed with his with his frankness about the nature of the war on terror and the war in Iraq, especially that he is against the war in Iraq, wants to end
mm-hmm.
it now. Thinks we never
very consistently on. Voted against it.
Yeah, very consistently.
And practically the only one to do so.
Yeah, but he also voted against this recent timetable.
Mm-hmm.
And he gave some reasons for doing that. I don't recall off the top of my head why. I believe it was, I'd have to go back and look at his columns.
He always explains why he does what he does. Leave you in any doubt.
Yeah, right here, actually. I'm looking at it. I'm pleased to have joined with the majority of my Republican colleagues to oppose the bill. Speaking about pork added to attract votes. Yeah, that's been a big issue for this one.
Loaded the pork in. That's right.
The appropriations, the earmarks, trying to attract votes to certain bills, so they stick on an endless number of earmarks. Yeah. And I would like to say, the Republicans are just as corrupt as the Democrats these days, and you can't tell the difference, but I think there is some difference. Unfortunately, the way our Congress functions right now, these earmarks, it's the way of the road. I mean, that's how it works. You're not going to get something this important pushed through unless you do some favors for somebody, unless you scratch somebody else's back. And there's a lot of back scratching going on here in order to get some sort of timeline for ending the war. And even then, it's foolish. I mean, they have the votes. They could pull the beams out right now.
They could, and they don't.
And they should.
Of course they should.
And we should be
loading up the planes and coming home.
Yeah. I appreciate that Ron Paul is anti-war, yet he voted against the timetable, and he explains exactly why. He's perhaps one of the most ardent anti-war congressmen we have, and yet he voted against the Democrats' timeline, and there's good reason for that, and people should look into it.
Mm-hmm. That's the thing about him, is his consistency, which is really amazing.
Yeah. Yes.
I mean, for the first few years after the, after the war started, he was consistently considered to be a joke because he would simply get up and vote against it.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, his nickname was Dr. No.
Well, I think Dr. No has just the dosage we need.
Mm-hmm.
That's why I've decided, and I've been getting a lot of help from my friends and family for this. But that's why I've decided that for the first time in my life, I'm going to register and vote in a Republican primary.
Mm-hmm.
I am going to walk right into my local polling place when the Texas primary comes up with big Republican on my voter's registration card, which truthfully kind of hurts a little bit. It makes me a little sick because the Republican Party has been the source of the most, well, the worst headaches I've experienced in my lifetime. And here I am, becoming one of them. But it's because mm-hmm. of this guy and the ideas he espouses. They're more powerful. His ideas are more powerful than any of the other candidates running today. And mm-hmm. that's why I'm going to go into the lion's den and support this man.
Mm-hmm. And it would be good. One of the things, of course, that needs to be discussed is whether or not it's possible to get him the nomination so that you'll have the opportunity to vote for him in November.
Mm-hmm.
Not this November, of course, in November after that.
Yeah.
But for purposes of thinking about that, why don't we bring up the subject of the present state and health of the Republican Party? Because, as you said, it's done a lot of really horrible things, and a group of individuals within it that we know of, neocons, are the ones that have been behind that. That's had its impact on the Republican Party, and that impact has devastated them.
Financially, yeah. I mean, it's absurd. RNC's almost broke.
Mm-hmm.
My local Republican Men's Club. Yeah.
Yes.
It's ridiculous. They can't get the conference halls that they used to get. It's on the budget. They can't support their candidates like they used to. It's on the budget. You know, going to go ahead and cut a few people from the office staff. It's on the budget. There's a steady decline present even here. Locally I see it. And my county's Democratic Party, on the other hand, is growing rapidly, and they're fired up. But
yes.
I don't know if that's really going to change anything.
Well, unfortunately, the thing that it's quite likely to change in the Democratic Party is, and this is one of the things that I have noticed, is you get the people who, they're going to politics to make money. And the kind of people who go into politics to do well for themselves don't generally do well for the country.
No. No, generally not, no.
And that's now, you know, one of the things that we're seeing in D.C. is that all of the candidates are being surveyed by various corporations to see who can deliver the goods for them, which is to continue their control.
Yeah.
Which is why the present sort of implosion of the Republican Party actually offers us some potentials, especially since, serendipitously, Ron Paul is a Republican.
Yeah, yeah. Now, when you talk about the implosion of the Republican Party, and I don't really have any facts on this one, so let me just step out on a limb and offer some of my opinion. The neocons are this strange amalgam of extreme liberalism and a few wedge issues that, you know, tickle the balls of the feet of everybody who's, you know, much more concerned about a child that isn't yet a child than they are, say, a grown man or a teenager. I understand that. You know, you want a place to wedge issues, you know, that's politics. But their policies are the exact opposite of conservatism. And what I really think happened to the Republican Party when Ronald Reagan took over was this group of people that were very much driven on a new sort of ideology that was twisted. They needed to give America a new great enemy. You know, the Soviets were no longer the great threat, and the world was more or less at peace. They needed to provide us with another boogeyman, and they worked
mm-hmm.
for it. They worked for it. Now, I'm not saying, I'm not making any allegations about 9/11. I'm just saying that they laid this out, and they wanted us to rise up and unite and fight something. anything really. We'll find something scary and just inflate it, kind of like what they do with, you know, they're always constantly catching Al Qaeda's number two. How many times have they caught Al Qaeda's number two guy? Today. Yeah, and you know, they work these people up as horrible monsters who are responsible for all these deaths. You know, even if they're not responsible for all these deaths, a lot of times they're working them up in the media and they're actively letting them run around and do horrible things. So when they pop them, oh, wow, everybody be relieved. We got the guy. You know, what was the bomber? And,
yeah, he was lurking in a cave in Afghanistan, you know, trembling. We should have been afraid.
Yeah. Well, what was the bomber in Baghdad? It was a big PR victory when they killed him last year. They dropped a bomb on the house, and the video was on all the news channels. What was his name?
I don't remember his name, but you know, after a while, they all sort of blurred together.
I remember reading through NBC News that U.S. forces had cornered that guy eight separate times, seven or eight times. Before he was actually killed, and they would put word out, you know, go up the chain of command. Do we execute? Do we take this guy out? You know, he's what we've made him up to be in the media. Do we kill him? And word came back from the White House every single time. Nope, let him go.
I guess they didn't. They didn't need the photo op yet.
No, they didn't need the photo op yet. They were waiting until it was politically pertinent. They're fighting a war with politics in mind.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's been something that Karl Rove has been infamous for.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, he practiced that very, very strongly while he was in Texas, and then he took that to D.C. with him, and he took the administration and the entire government and has been reconfiguring it into a political tool.
Mm-hmm. Well, but it should be said that one man alone could not do such a thing. There are far too many willing people under him.
Oh, yes. Very willing.
And my fear is that though some rather radically liberal people exist today within the Democratic Party, none are as radical or as liberal as the neoconservatives. And my fear is that a lot of the neoconservatives who are not very public about their views are going to switch to the Democratic Party now that they control Congress and the Senate, and they're going to abandon Bush, and they're going to abandon the Republicans, and they're going to just start calling themselves openly liberals now, which they were more radical liberals than anything. And that's how things work in the two-party system, you know?
Mm-hmm.
You've got your rhinos, and you've got your fake liberals, your fake Democrats. And they just go back and forth, whichever, where they follow the power. It's like a magnet.
Mm-hmm. Well, the Republican Party is imploding. There are a few figures that we can take a look at. One, take a look at the 06 election. That was less about, unfortunately, Democratic activism than it was about Republicans staying home and sitting on their hands and refusing to vote.
Mm-hmm.
If you talk to people who are registrars in various parts of the country, this is particularly true in California. People are going in and re-registering and not, so that they're not Republicans anymore. And that's sort of shocking because it's very unusual for people to switch that sort of affiliation, especially if they've had it in a long-term basis or sometimes even for multi-generations. And that's what's happening.
Well, that's what happened in 94, too, you know,
yeah,
for the Democrats.
Mm-hmm. And
that makes sense.
Yeah, and the other thing is the oldest youth organization, political youth organization, is the Young Republicans. It is now imploding. There used to be at least one chapter in every county in California. There used to be pretty much one chapter in every county across the country. There are six in California today. There are states where they don't have a single chapter.
I'm not surprised. I'm not surprised. How can the majority of people aren't going to stick around and just watch, you know, the people that they thought, you know, were going to help them just run around the world and kill hundreds of thousands of people.
That's right. It's the only way they can do it. It's that they can get up on their hind legs and they can walk out, and that's what they've done.
Mm-hmm.
Now, in terms of a Ron Paul candidacy, this creates a problem, but it also creates an opportunity.
It creates a vacuum.
And vacuums can be filled.
Mm-hmm. And that's what I hope we can do. I'm not a Republican. I'm quite anti-Republican, or at least anti-Republican since, you know, as long as I can remember. But I'm not anti-Republican, you know, pre-1960. I'm not anti-Republican, you know, back in the Goldwater days. I'm not anti-conscience of a conservative. I like that sort of philosophy. I look on it with very friendly eyes.
Mm-hmm.
And that's Ron Paul's convinced me that I have to become that Republican. And I even kind of have to roll my eyes when I say that still.
I can hear you rolling your eyes from here.
Yeah. I have to become that because I would really like to see conservatism actually have some form of representation today. And I would like to see liberalism have a form of representation today, but not in the crazed, bloodthirsty way it's being represented by the president today.
Mm-hmm. Well, that was one of the things about the way that it used to be. When Goldwater was, you know, when the Republican Party was alive with the philosophy of Goldwater, it wasn't a pro-war thing. It was a pro-individual thing. The present of, you know, the Goldwater movement gave birth to the libertarian movement in 1971. And a lot of people who considered themselves libertarians simply left the Republican Party. That really was the source.
Yeah.
Of course, libertarians can be very strange. We all know this.
Oh, well, sure. I mean, they're, you know, independent. They all think a little bit differently. They're individuals. I mean, we need more individuals. We need fewer ideologues.
Mm-hmm.
The ideologues march in step. The individuals kind of swarm at random.
It's like herding cats.
Yeah.
And that's a pretty good thing, because for one thing, when that happens, you have a hard time getting enough people together to oppress anybody.
That's right.
And that would be a good thing for government, not to be able to oppress anybody.
Mm-hmm. That's how it was originally set up. Well, for us anyway.
Mm-hmm.
Not so anymore.
That's right. But it could be. And so what we're looking at here is a sort of a field that has these opportunities that are available that could be taken advantage of, that have been created by circumstance. And I think that's sort of what we're talking about here, right? It's like you're thinking about, you're going to vote for Ron Paul. How can people make sure that he gets the nomination? Because that's sort of a first step.
Okay. I think I remember somebody advocating voting for Rick Santorum in the last election by holding your nose. Okay, that's what people have to do. They have to carry that forward. They have to hold their noses, put that R on their voter's registration card, and go in there with some good ideas about individual liberty and constitutional governance in their heads. And, well, I guess it's not pull the old lever anymore. It's push the old touchscreen. Hope it's not rigged. And cast that vote for Ron Paul. I certainly recommend looking into some of his online resources, where it seems as though a wealth of his campaigning is going to be done. RonPaul2008.com is a pretty good resource. He's got a MySpace page. He's got a daily update page. He has a YouTube channel as well, which is, let me see here, youtube.com/profile?user=RonPaul2008.com
Mm-hmm.
That's a little convoluted, but there's a link on RonPaul2008.com to his YouTube channel, and you can watch the guy speak, and you can watch a variety of his speeches on different topics and issues. I mean, he's got a pretty robust online presence, and it's spreading. I appreciate
it. It is.
Yeah.
It's very much spreading. People listen to his message, and they they sort of get to look and understand the message of his life, mm-hmm. which I think is even more profound than anything he says because he's lived it.
Mm-hmm.
And you can say anything, but the fact is words often lie. But you don't lie with the, you know, with the body of your life. If you look at what somebody's done, you understand what they're going to do.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
And that's the thing about him that I think sets him out from pretty much all of the other candidates.
Yeah. Yeah, and I've been pursuing him, my role as a journalist, pursuing him for an interview. And so I suppose by doing this radio interview, I'm compromising my objectivity, but I'm a journalist kind of in the same vein as Thompson or, well, if you could consider Tom Wolfe a journalist. I don't know if you'd consider him a journalist, but I reject objectivity. Now, I have to pretend that I'm objective sometimes, pretend that I don't have an opinion or I just simply withhold my opinion on various matters. Generally speaking, it's whenever I have to have access to somebody. I don't want to give them my opinion because, well, you know, then I won't
yes,
have
I understand.
Anymore. But on matters of federal politics, I typically don't have access to these people. So, yeah, I voice my opinion. Now, Ron Paul, yeah, I may or may not have access to him. But that doesn't really matter. This isn't about access. This is about liberty. And I support the guy. What can I say? I'm a citizen, too, you know?
Absolutely.
I think that as far as the journalism and objectivity goes, I think that truth, real truth, is inherently tied to perspective, and truth is different for every single person, though we're not, truth and facts are separate things, but I think to get as close as possible to the real truth, you have to get as close as possible to your own perspective and put yourself into your narrative, and
mm-hmm.
that's what I try and do. I don't get to do it very often. But when I do get that chance, it's always very fun.
Mhm. And taking a look, let's take a look for a moment at this race, because let's take a look at the beauty contest aspect of it, because that's one of the things that has struck me. I'm older than you are, of course, and so I remember the time when the whole idea of a political campaign for president was talking about the ideas. And that's something that's become very much absent in recent years. It used to be that people sat down and they discussed the ideas. And would you agree that that's something that people haven't been doing?
Oh, sure. Yeah. No, people aren't discussing ideas anymore. People are discussing other people.
It's like a gossip column.
Yeah. It's as though the Hollywood press and the Washington press have merged.
And we've been hijacked by Hollywood.
Oh,
I like that.
Again?
Huh?
Again? Well, boy, here comes the lobbyist money into pouring into the small film studios. Kind of like Jack Abramoff in that Dolph Lundgren film. What was it called? Red something or other. It was an anti-Soviet film.
Oh, yes.
He was the executive producer on it. Yeah, yeah, mm-hmm. Hollywood, fifth branch of the government.
Yeah, or that DC 9/11 that Lionel Chetwin made for Bush
mm-hmm.
in 2003. Do you remember that?
Mm-hmm. And
perfectly appalling.
Let's not even touch United 93.
Yes.
Did you see that?
No, I didn't see that one.
It was troubling.
But I heard about it. There's only so much I can stomach.
Mm-hmm.
There are times when I say, I really have to pass on this one. I might get sick.
I totally understand. Pass on it by all means. That's why I prefaced it. And let's not even talk about this one.
Yes.
Yeah.
But
some of the propaganda is a little intense.
Mhm. Actually, Lionel Chetwin, did you see that movie? It purports to be what really happened with Bush on 9/11.
Mm-hmm.
I was talking to Lionel Chetwin about something completely unrelated. Just before he started filming in 93, and the way that he got to the site for the filming, which was in Canada, was on Air Force One.
Mm-hmm.
As a matter of fact, we had to cut my interview short because he was very excited about getting to fly on Air Force One. I thought that was kind of interesting.
Well, I would be excited to fly on Air Force One as well. I wouldn't be excited to be with the president. I just want to see the plane.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I'm sure Chapman had different motives.
I'm sure that there were definite motives there. But one of the things that Americans need to take a look at very clearly now is the presidential candidates and what we actually know about them as opposed to what we think we know about them. You take any of them, and what do we really know about them? We know what they've told us. You ought to think about whether or not you'd hire a babysitter this way. If you hire an accountant, do you know what you have to do to become an accountant?
No.
You have to be bonded.
Hmm.
Let's think about that as a concept for a moment. Does anybody bond presidential candidates? If they don't perform up to par, how do we hold them accountable?
We don't.
That's right. And if you take a look at their past, we know that the best predictor of future behavior is past behavior. So do we really take a look at their past behavior?
Sometimes, if it involves a wedge issue, like, Rudy Giuliani said that he wants public funds for legal abortion back in, what was it, the late 80s, early 90s. Yeah, and then everybody in the Republican Party just gasped. That's about as far as they go, as far as looking into someone's background.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but when I say looking into somebody's background, the ironic thing is here politically that everybody knows what opposition research is.
Oh, sure.
But we don't do it to the candidates and make it available to the people.
Oh, I don't know. I thought that the Bush team, when they were pushing for the first election, they did really, really good work with John McCain.
But that wasn't true.
It was true?
No, it wasn't true.
Okay.
Are you talking about the Black Love Child?
Yeah. That one. One of the more despicable ways to attempt a smear. I can't believe that people bought that. I can't believe that people went, oh no, Black Love Child? And because of that, they didn't vote for him. What?
Well, it was very carefully planned. It was very carefully timed, and it was very not true.
Oh, yeah.
And the people who said it knew it. Do you know what happened when John McCain found out who did it?
Hmm.
You want to hear a really cute story?
Did he kiss somebody's ring or what?
No.
Yeah, sure,
he found out when John McCain, he was in New York, when he found out who was responsible for making up the story and spreading it. And he had his driver change directions, took him to the Wall Street Journal, stormed in, and offered to beat the butt of the person who did it. And that person hid under his desk.
Oh,
I'm not kidding.
Wow.
You want to know who it was?
Who was it?
John Fund.
What's his position?
He was on the editorial staff of the Wall Street Journal.
Boy.
And he's been a political operative since he was placed there by Robert Novak in, I think it was 84.
Mm, yes, Robert Novak. He's my favorite Prince of Darkness.
Yes, Mr. Prince of Darkness himself. But that's how that happened. And that's one of the things, of course, we need to eliminate from American politics. You shouldn't be able to cheat and get away with it.
Well, we've had 7 years of that now. I think hopefully people aren't getting too used to all the cheating.
One hopes. But let's go back for a minute and talk about Ron Paul and the idea of actually getting him the Republican nomination. Because we've got all this exciting, you know, that the metaphor of, I know there's got to be a pony in here someplace. Because you have a pile of manure.
Oh, right, yeah, sure.
And
yeah.
That's really what we have here. We've got this imploding Republican Party, but you've got this really pretty, you've got this really great Republican candidate. Hmm. And you've got people who actually have had probably a dozen progressives tell me, you know, I'd vote for Ron Paul, but of course he can't get the nomination because I can't vote for him in the primary.
Hmm.
And here you are, you've made exactly the same observation.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I voted for Nader, and I know that that's probably making you twitch, but he just struck me as a lot better than Gore or Bush. And I know how you feel about Nader. We spoke about it previously. But I have to vote on principle. I have to vote with my heart. I can't vote for a lesser of two evils until it comes down to the general. I feel like I don't have a choice but to try and support the person who I like the best in the primary. You know, it's the largest field of candidates. And, I'm an American. I can register as a Republican. That is not something that is crazy. Because I have to cast a vote of conscience, and my vote of conscience.
Absolutely, I agree with you. I think that would be a good thing to do. But if you can imagine yourself doing it, can you imagine like other people doing it?
Sure. Independents, maybe. Yeah, I could imagine independents flocking towards this guy. I could see even some Greens. I could definitely see the whole libertarian group just storming the Republican headquarters and basically saying, all right, we're in charge now.
Yes, I could see that too.
I would actually like that. That would be nice.
Yeah, that would be nice. It would be nice to see people who said, enough is enough. We voted for Goldwater. That was why we got into politics, so that we could, you know, change the direction of America in that generation, and, you know, it didn't work, and we're going to do it now.
Yeah.
That would be nice. Instead of the rhetoric, let's have the reality. Thank you very much.
The reality caucus.
That's right. Yeah, let's have some reality. That would be a very interesting thing to have.
Absolutely.
And you can see, if you take a look at what's been happening in American politics over the last, I would say probably two generations almost, because you've been seeing this steady sort of movement toward a position that, as you pointed out earlier, is so far removed from original conservatism.
Yeah.
That what we really are looking at here is almost a call to sort of reignite something that was sort of essentially always very, you know, very much at the core of American thought.
Well, yeah. You know, don't spend beyond your means and keep your government, you know, out of my pants and off my body and out of my home and, you know, while you're at it, get off my property.
Yes.
That seems pretty logical.
It does. Yes, it seems very logical, and it actually seems very doable because there's so many Americans who would really like to go there.
You know, keep off my pocketbook. And don't send my kids to die in a war. That's a big
that
one.
I don't approve of. And then don't create economic conditions that make it impossible for my kid to get any other kind of job.
Mm-hmm. And that's exactly what they're doing.
Yes, exactly.
And they're growing the welfare state while they're at it, which, you know, they talked the good talk back during the campaigns. Oh, it's compassionate conservatism and help them get off welfare. Well, by helping them, it just means giving them more money. So it's great.
So you said that your friends are giving you a hard time about voting for Ron Paul.
Yeah.
And supporting him.
Just because he's a Republican. They don't really know. Like, I haven't sat them down and made them watch him speak or made them read one of his articles. Not yet.
Would they do that?
Oh, sure.
Can
yeah,
you track
I hang
them
out
down?
With pretty. Well, I will be doing that over the next few weeks. It's a process. You know, we're all sitting around putting back cheap Lone Star beers and watching the Democratic presidential debate. I'm like, you know, forget these guys. I'm going to be a Republican. They thought it was the funniest thing they had heard all year.
They just laughed,
me,
right?
Yeah, me going Republican. They thought it was hilarious. And I said, no, I'm serious. And everybody's kind of looked around.
It's like, what, and, is he feeling okay? What's wrong with that guy?
Yeah, when I told my boss, who's a Republican, he's a Bush Republican, so I don't know if you call that a conservative or not, but when I told my boss that I was going to be registering in the for the Republican primary, he did a double take, and he put his hand on my forehead. Steve, are you all right? Yeah. Just there's this anti-war, pro-liberty candidate that's really got my eyebrows up. So
really, what you are is you see yourself as being a Ron Paul Republican.
The same way that
we had a generation who considered ourselves Goldwater Republicans.
I wouldn't necessarily even put that word Republican in there. I'm just registering Republican because I have to in order to vote for the guy.
Mm-hmm.
If the primaries were open to everybody and I could vote in both primaries, which would be really great, I would stay an independent. I don't like being part of the party, and I can guarantee you the day after I cast that vote, I'm going to go back to the registrar's office and we'll become an independent again.
Mm-hmm.
But I have to cast a vote of conscience. That's all it comes down to. I would call myself a liberty liberal.
I like that, a liberty liberal. A liberty liberal who will be registered Republican to vote for a liberty liberal.
Mm-hmm. Can you dig it?
I can dig that, I tell you. I can dig that. And that's really fantastic. Hey, I want people to read your blog. Could you give people your blog so that they can keep in touch with what you're saying and what you're doing?
Yeah, sure. I blog regularly at gonzomuckraker.blogspot.com. Gonzo is an homage to one of my prime inspirations for getting into journalism, Hunter S. Thompson.
Mm-hmm.
Muckraker as the was the term that President Roosevelt used to describe journalists who he didn't much care for, and it's Muckraker, and it's a fun blog. You know, it's all politics, and I've had it since August 2005. So we've been going on with it for a long time. There's a lot of various media on here. But I just thought, you know, a lot of good writers made good money and a good living chronicling the insanity of the Nixon years. Well, I might as well make an attempt to chronicle the insanity of the Bush years.
Well, there's certainly a lot of insanity.
Yeah. Thankfully, the Bush years might end sooner than scheduled to.
We can all certainly pray for that. Well, thank you for being with us today. This has been fascinating. And I definitely hope that you're going to get the opportunity not only to vote for Ron Paul in the primary, but in the general election.
Me too.
Well, you take care.
All right. Thanks, Linda.
Thanks.
Bye-bye.
Bye. And that's our show for today, Friday, April 27th, 2007. Here at The Spiritual Politician, we're working to help individuals find the ideas that make all human organizing tools, like government, non-impactive on us as people and the world. Freedom means we can choose for ourselves the path we walk life toward the truth each of us encounters at life's end. Because that path can be lonely, we reach out to each other along the way. On this show, as we do with all our shows, we end by reading the section of the Declaration of Independence that is America's mission statement. We hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal, that they are endowed by their Creator with certain unalienable rights, and that among these are life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. that to secure these rights, governments are instituted among men, deriving their just powers from the consent of the governed, that when any form of government becomes destructive of these ends, it is the right of the people to alter or to abolish it, and to institute new government, laying its foundation on such principles and organizing its powers in such form as to them shall seem most likely to affect their safety and happiness. Prudence, indeed, will dictate that governments long established should not be changed for light and transient causes, and accordingly all experience has shown that mankind are more disposed to suffer while evils are sufferable than to right themselves by abolishing the forms to which they are accustomed. But when a long train of abuses and usurpations, pursuing invariably the same object, evidences a design to reduce them under absolute despotism, it is their right, it is their duty, to throw off such government and to provide new guards for their future security. This is Melinda Pillsbury Foster, coming to you from BBS Radio. God bless the journey that brings us to freedom, and may God be with you every step of the way. Good night.